Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast. Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with the season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, hey. Anna. Oh, wow. Sorry. Zoom has really fucked up the timing of my words, but we have a really great episode.
Yep. No, we do. We have a great episode today.
I wanted to say y'all, like for y'all, an episode.
Yeah. So you should just start doing that. We have a great episode. And then it's like episode for y'all. It's perfect. This is perfect, Shireen. It cleans us up tighter, less edits.
Okay. I'll do this all the time now. We have a great episode.
Yeah.
We're joined by a very lovely person, someone we met through a previous guest. He's a rapper, producer, just an all-around incredible soul. It's Kelechi. And we talk all about how he started rapping, the personal motivations of rapping. And we just talk about a lot of like philosophical things, to be honest. And it got really fun. It's going to be much more fun than this intro. So I'm going to stop talking and let you listen to it. Enjoy.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. We're recording this on Monday today, so it's a little switcheroo, but I don't mind it. It's, you know, we're starting the week strong, even though we were late. It's fine.
Monday, a little on the earlier side than we record. So now is usually when I'm taking my dog out and trying to make him shit. And he would not shit forever this morning. So that's why I was a little late. And I had to be like, all right, man, it's now or never. You shit now or you sit in the living room and look out the window and wish you were shitting. So
I mean, I like that your just text was so blunt. It was just like, sorry, I am late. Ace won't shit. Yeah. And that was it. And I was like, I got it. It's fine. Do your thing.
He was taking forever. I was like, I don't know if you like understand what this is, but I have shit to do. Like, you need to shit so I can go do my shit. Mm-hmm. And it took forever. So I was running a little late. But it's nice now that we're here to start the week with a nice conversation.
Yeah, it's starting strong. And I guess we can just get right into it because you might have heard his sweet little chuckle in the background.
Dulcet tones.
That's hilarious.
So if you've heard the Faye episode, which you should hear, but he had a friend on that you probably could you heard him chime in here and there. He's hilarious. And we were really motivated to have him on because we want to get to know him better. But it's Kelechi, and he's a rapper, producer, and so many other things that we're going to get to know. But welcome.
Wow.
Welcome.
I'm so flattered that my ancillary presence earned me a spot.
I mean, it's not about earning.
Great.
You're just like, you're just an interesting person. It's like we
I
have to have you
that.
On.
appreciate that. I really, really do appreciate it. It's cool. It's cool when, you know, people
Faye like had a vote of confidence, you know? So we're like, yeah, his very best true. Friend is probably cool too.
You know, you are the company you keep. I'm real proud of Faye. I love that guy.
So, Kelechi, now you're here. I want to talk about your friendship with Faye, but I also want to rewind a little bit. Because I know you went to school together at one point, right?
Yes, we went to middle school and some of high school together, yes.
Okay, well, I guess you might mention him when I ask you about your early life, but in case people somehow missed the Faye episode, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Marietta, Georgia, which is like 20 minutes north of Atlanta.
What was that like growing up there for you?
It was cool. It was, I feel like I have had a really balanced but like interesting childhood in the sense that it was like close enough to like stuff and people and different types of people, but like far enough away from the city to where like you would have had to like look for trouble. There was enough proximity to like different types of people to like be cultured and to know things, but yeah. like not so much to where it's like hop on the, you know, train when I should be at school or some shit. I don't know.
Right. How far is Marietta?
25, 30 minutes, depending on how you obey traffic laws.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I've heard of it. I'll tell you after how I've heard of it, because I can't say on air. It's kind of a weird story. But
Anna always has stuff like that, like teases the audience being like, I have to tell you something, it's off air. I wonder. That's always amazing. Really funny.
That's amazing. Yeah, we'll share all the off air tea later.
Yes.
Let's get into it.
But so growing up, like a couple, like a, under an hour from Atlanta, was that like like the city you would go to all the time?
Yeah. Probably late high school is when I like started to like, you know, like get rides with friends and like go to stores. And,
yeah.
You know.
That was the place to go.
Eat at places. Yeah. It was like, yeah, we would do stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
So where is your family from originally? Like the, you know, Georgia or where did they come from?
My family is Nigerian. My parents came here in like the 80s and were first in Alabama, moved to Atlanta, had some kids. So here we are.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so your parents are immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Nigeria. Yeah.
Do you know why they chose to go to Georgia?
The choices were either New York or Alabama. And they picked Alabama because it wasn't as cold.
Oh, like, sorry, Alabama. Yeah. I said Georgia earlier.
Yeah, but then, I mean, I think the plan, I don't know, was eventually to end up in Atlanta anyway. Because here we are.
Because, like, I feel like a lot of immigrants usually, not a lot, but some immigrants, they end up finding a community somewhere, like, with a lot of, like, similar people to them. Like, my dad came to Anaheim because there was a huge Arab community. Mm-hmm. Anna's parents, they ended up in Utah where there was a huge Persian community. Was that kind of like that for the Nigerian community or not really?
You know, it's crazy. There's a school which might still have this, like, exchange program in Nigeria. So it was like, it was just a way that like people would end up here from, you know, from overseas, just like a kind of community of like exchange students. It was Oakwood College, like lots of Nigerians. Like, I don't know if you heard of Davido. Dad went to Oakwood, like a bunch of that, like older generation of Nigerians, like came to through Alabama and then like kind of like spread from there.
That's an incredible institution that can do that. I like that.
I mean, I think there was, in the 70s and 80s, they let in a lot of foreign exchange students. Like, my parents came and, like, separately on their own, you know, trips, they both just happened to get accepted to Utah because University of Utah and Utah State. And, like, they were accepting foreign students. And it was, like, random places that were just like, yeah, come on down, learn here. And it's like, so that's where they ended up. I always think it's interesting.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, I think that there was like some sort of like immigration act that happened around that time, if I'm not mistaken, that like made it easier for a time. And they were like, whoa, this is a lot of foreigners. Let me just
then they were like,
squeeze that valve.
Go a complete 180.
Let's shut that down.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So growing up, Faye mentioned that he always liked music. What were your passions as a kid? Also, you don't have to talk about Faye. We talked about him already, but I just mentioned
him. I love talking about Faye.
Yeah. No, that was last week's episode or whatever that week was. Don't worry about that.
Faye and I are very romantic in that sense. We're always talking about each other, so it's fine. But I was definitely into music a lot, like growing up. You know, I was like writing poems in middle school. And then
I love that.
And then I
love poetry.
Yeah, I kind of jokingly started rapping with my friends. And then from there, I kind of like was like, oh, I'm actually like good at this, you know, like is this, you know, so me feeling like and I took it more seriously than my friends took it. So
That's cool. I mean, it makes sense. I see the poetry to rapping gateway.
Yes.
It's not that
that's
far
my favorite
off.
Rapping gateway, to be honest. I really respect a poet turned musician rapper. Maybe because like Tupac did it so well, but like also I just like respect that kind of mentality behind anything, you know? Yeah. It's like you come from a different place.
And I think that like at my core, I'm just like a writer. Not that the music comes second or is any less important. But like that just kind of became, it's like the tool, like the,
right.
It's like, you know, some people are writers, they write books. Some people are writers, they write, you know, articles. Some people are writers, they're editors. Some people are writers, it's on music. So
I like that mentality.
Yeah, it's just the words, man. I saw a blurry animal go through the background. That was very cool.
That was probably the one that did his shit.
No, that was the cat. The cat and the dog are the same size. So, and they're both white. So you'll see them occasionally. Mm.
There's little clouds in the background.
What do you guys think makes dogs so particular about where they defecate?
I don't know. My dog is, I don't know. He's like, it's almost like he has to be in the mood. So if he's distracted in any way, he won't do it. Like if he sees another dog or if he sees just anything, just a person acting weird or like a car, like he can't focus. If he can't focus, he can't shit. Like he has to be fully in the zone. Or it's just like game over.
Not gonna happen.
So external things kept happening that kept diverting attention. Okay.
Well, okay. I've never had a dog, so this is just me psychoanalyzing dogs. Part of me thinks that like it's a way for them to flex their power. It's like they're taking back power. Like, oh, you have to watch me shit. Oh, I live in your house. You're gonna have to really figure out how to make me shit. You know.
You're taking it very personally.
Yeah, I'm also really overestimating the intelligence of like the pettiness of dogs. Like,
I don't know about that because when they do shit, they look at you with such a look of shame.
Yeah, like they like, do look ashamed.
It's part of the act.
I think it's like them, it's a shameful act. It's also like when you're like in the bathroom, like if I use the bathroom and the door is cracked, like my dog will come in and sit next to me because they come and sit next to you because they're protecting you because you're in a like vulnerable position.
I thought you were going to say because you saw them ashamed and that they want to see you ashamed.
No.
See, I come at this from a much different angle.
I know. You got to relax, man. These dogs are not, they're not doing 40 chests right now. They're just like, oh, do you need, you're kind of like, you know, squatting. You're not in a place. If you get attacked, you have no chance. So I'll come protect you. So like, that's what they do.
I just like how she thinks that they have this like Machiavellian like just fucking...
never fucking know. We're not in their brains. Also, like, trust no one, not even your pets. This is why I don't have a dog. I do want a cat, though, but I feel like they're even more petty and Machiavellian.
Cats, yes. Cats are definitely Machiavellian because they're on their own shit. But dogs are more, they're like they have like three speeds. They're like, I'm hungry. And then there's like, I have to go sniff outside. And then there's like, I gotta go. And that's like it. Like, they're not really
they
like.
Cycle through those.
And then they're just like, you know, like that's their energy. And then, you know, it's hard to imagine my dog being like I know he knows he's cute. So I know he knows he can get away with stuff, but I wouldn't say he's like full on like evil. Yeah. Like,
I'm not saying that. I was just trying to like, you know. Like part of me does think it's a little bit of a power move because my friend has a dog and she's tiny and she has big dog energy though. And one time they were trying to potty train her for the longest time. They did the whole bell thing at the door. And one time he's told me that she looked right at him in the middle of the living room, like dead face, like right eye contact, and just started peeing and maintained eye contact with him the whole time.
Wow.
And just walked away.
Wow. It's like, I'm doing this shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing like, this. What are you
like,
going to do?
You're the bitch of the situation.
What are you going to do? Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe.
Anyway.
Maybe there might be some. Maybe there's varying levels of intelligence and morality. In
Machiavellianness. I love that you brought up that phrase. That's perfect. Or that term, rather. I love when a guest like asks us a question because it's just like it opens up a dialogue and you just happen to ask about dogs pooping, which is funny to me.
It was there.
It was
no
there.
Callback.
Let's go back to you.
enough about dog shitting, Kelechi. We need to talk about you, okay? Yeah,
it's a nice attempt to pivot the conversation.
We see what you're doing.
That's hilarious.
So, okay. You're in school, you know, you're in Murrieta, you're growing up. So, like, how do your parents perceive, like, your poetry or your rapping? Like, are they, is it even on their radar? Or are they just kind of be like, kids are kids?
The poetry was never on their radar. The music was because it was louder. Yeah. So they could hear it being made.
Yeah.
Contentious might not be the word. Contentious might be like the trauma response, but maybe me and my mom just like disagreed on career choice. But like it felt super contentious for me. It was like this adversarial thing as a young man. But like also there was like a degree of misunderstanding, which totally retrospectively I understand. Like all for her, she's just hearing music. You know what I'm saying? And it's like the assumption is it's partying. And it's like me at the time, I feel like I'm like honing a skill and making a craft and blah, blah, blah. So like I think that like as it became a career, she started to like understand it, you know? So But yeah, not initially. She did not, my parents did not take to it well initially.
No, I mean, I think that's with most immigrant parents, including mine. They're not exactly sitting around being like, you know what? You focus on your art.
Yeah, exactly.
You really focus on it.
I took a massive risk going to another continent when I was young so you could do something weird. It's like, no, that's not why I did this. That's not. So I get it. I get it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they're like, I learned a whole new language to work here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to do that? No, you don't. So maybe like be a doctor, you fuck. You're like, no.
Yes. The least God, you can do.
You're so strict. God, you know, that's me.
And retrospectively, I can understand that that's what that is. It's like, it's just, I have one view as a young person and you grow up and you're like, well, of course she didn't want you making beats.
Yeah.
Like, of course the fuck not. Like, why? What good parent.
Looking back, I would have also been like, dude, stop. Like, you're annoying.
Like, what are you, like, what are you doing?
Be like, you know? I'm like, mom, I'm making like experimental video art. And she's like, okay, go fuck yourself. No.
You know, and I think the flip side of it is also like, you know, like, if you're going to do something cool, like, should your parents understand what it is? They're not going to get it, you know?
Yeah, then it's not cool anymore.
And it's not cool anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
If your parents get it, it's probably not.
If your parents are like so excited being like, oh my God, yes, I love this too. You're like, oh, I need to pivot the opposite direction. So that's like you become a lawyer.
They're like, heck yeah, Kelechi, this beat is tight. And you're like, no.
You're like, I'm doing something wrong.
That's hilarious. You know what's so funny actually, like to completely refute that point is that my mom had told me to like make like the kind of music I'm making now, she had been telling me to make like more like less rappy, more like she'd been told me to do this shit a long time ago.
Okay, so she
which
knew.
Is so interesting.
Like in what way? Like was it like a different type of music that you weren't doing before, or like
to pivot to my album?
Please,
my last album, Going Home, was like my first like intentional like attempts at making like more contemporary like Afrobeats and Afrobeat subgenres of like Alt-A and like all different, you know, different types of stuff that's more African based rather than like rap or R&B based. My mom had told me to do that shit like 10 years ago, you know, like literally when she first came around to like liking the fact that I was doing music, she was like, no, I just wish you would do something like doing that. We dance to it. Like just stuff that we could dance, more stuff she could dance to.
That's so nice. I think like combining your culture with your music is probably was like a really proud thing for your mom to like witness, right?
Oh, or she's like, into it. She's into it. Yeah. She just likes to dance. She's just more into dancing and stuff, you know. So she just wants to dance to it.
She was like, "Can you just please make music I can dance to?"
That's really like all of us. It was totally selfish for her. But she was like a visionary. She was like a cultural visionary. She saw that all the stuff that's happening now with like Black Panther and Beyonce and Thames and Essence. Mm-hmm. My mom saw that shit a long time ago. She should work at a record label.
Wow. So what did your parents end up doing after coming here?
Parents came here. They work in medicine. My mom's a nurse. Dad's a nurse.
I mean, there you go. See, that's the thing that like they go and they'll do like a practical job. But even if their interests lie elsewhere, like my dad in Iran was like a stage actor, but then came to America and became an engineer. And he's like, well, you know, I had to be realistic. I'm not going to come to America and be a stage actor. Like, come on. But then, you know, like there's stuff within them that like it's still there. Like anytime my dad's on the podcast, like he's like, oh, let me get ready for my close up. You know, like yeah. he automatically is like in the zone. He's like, oh, he's you know, and you're like, yeah, it's because it's actually there. Like they do have interests outside of, you know, being a nurse. You know, it's like that's mm-hmm. not their full lives. Like they actually were a person before this, but they chose to do something practical because they were coming yeah. to this country.
It's so interesting because it's like we have something that they kind of don't have, which is like the opportunity to fail, which yeah. is like, mm-hmm. if we fail, we'll probably be okay. But they're like, nah, yeah. we got this yeah. one lifetime.
Yeah.
And that's probably why they're hard on us, to be honest, because yeah. they don't understand having that safety net when you fall, right? They're just like, this is the one thing you should do, X, Y, Z. Then again, I've seen plenty of supportive parents, so...
It usually develops, or at least for me personally, it develops as like your relationship with your parents develop, and they like
yeah.
start seeing you as a person and not just like some kid, like yeah. you know, like because like I think agree. That happens, like you see your parents as more of a person than like this like totally authoritative. Of course, you like stay respectful and all this stuff, but like.
But you see them more for like the humans they are. I exactly. totally agree. Like as the more they start to see you as a person, the more you do, and mm-hmm. maybe vice versa, whatever comes first. But it's the most interesting shift in your mind. At least it was for me, because like suddenly they were always whole people, but like in a different way. Like I saw my mom being really into reading and writing, and she was into like she loves European literature and all this stuff. And like she hinted at it growing up because she's like she used to be like a teacher and like a translator and stuff. But as you get older, you appreciate like, oh, she's just like me. And if anything, I'm an extension of them.
100%. You have like really good opportunities to understand yourself if you like understand your parents. Like yeah. to know them is a thing, but then it's like, okay. It's like, how did you get here mm-hmm. so that I can understand why you think the way you think? So it'd be like, okay, I kind of get it. We can yeah. even disagree on whatever we disagree about, but it's like, I get it, you know?
But I get why you disagree. Mm-hmm. I think that's the very mature growth that has to happen is like when you're a teenager or like a rebellious whatever, you're just like, I don't want to be controlled, like, fuck you, whatever. And then you grow up and you're like, I understand where they were coming from, kind of. Like, there are some things that I don't, mm-hmm. I won't forgive, but other things you can understand. Anyway, let's take our first break and we'll be right back. And talk about dog pooping some more.
Nice.
Oh my God.
This Mother's Day, join CARE in honoring the resilience of mothers around the world. In Sierra Leone, facing one of the world's highest maternal mortality rates, one nurse named Zainab has not lost a single mother. Supported by CARE's work, Zainab's clinic has become a beacon of hope in her community. Zainab's spirit extends to CARE's work worldwide, aiming to ensure every mother's safety during childbirth. Learn more at care.org/Mother's Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married yeah. at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation yeah. that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing
right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with Kelechi. So I do want to talk about your album, but I want to talk about how you ended up making it or getting there in the first place and like having the, I don't know, not like the internal ability to like make it happen kind of thing. Because I think like that's a huge part of creating anything. But for you, so you're maybe you're out of high school. Like what happens then? What's in your mind as far as like what you want to do?
It's so funny because if I would have asked myself at 18, what I would like, where I would have been, I was like, oh, I'm not even gonna have to graduate. Like that, I wasn't even thinking about the end of it because I was like, oh, I'll be famous in like a year and a half. Like that was like the mindset.
Yeah.
So like I was in school, but like not really in school, paying more attention to like doing music than actually being in school. And then mostly it was like thinking that I would be famous next week and like making songs and like barely going to school, like going to class sometimes, you know? But yeah, that was like the like post high school,
like mentality.
Yeah.
But then what actually happened? Like, where did life actually end up taking you?
I did 2.5 years of school and then totally like rather than doing half and half and like pretending to be in school while I'm actually, you know, I was like, I'm going to put it all in, not put it all in the music. I got a job at like T-Mobile. And I was like, I'm focused on music and I'm just working. From there, my brother enters a song of mine into like a contest.
Ooh.
My brother was my manager. When I decided to drop out, like he became my manager. He enters a song of mine into a contest and like I win a bunch of money to make an album from like Mountain Dew.
Oh, wait, so cool. You won the contest?
Yeah, I win this contest. Yeah.
That's amazing. And,
that
must have been, I mean, even though it's like a contest, I feel like that must have been validating.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was. It was really validating. The thing that we said when we entered it, like, is me and my brother, we listened to my record. We're like, if they listen, I'm going to win. We're like, maybe there's the end. And that was kind of our way of probably like coping with like what would have happened if we didn't win. We're like, you know, if we don't win, they probably didn't hear it because this shit is hard. You know, that was like, mentality. And we won. A bunch of other stuff played out, but this is maybe 2015, but a bunch of other stuff played out between like winning the contest and like getting the money to make the album. But like it eventually happened. We like performed at South by Southwest.
That's really incredible that you won. I mean, I'm sure it was like a long process to even get the money and go on, et cetera. But like once you were able to like use the money or get it, like what was your plan of attack, you and your brother kind of thing?
It's like marketing, doing a little bit of touring, shooting some videos, and like paying for beats and all your stuff. And we put together this album called Before the Quarter, and it was like a prelude to my second album, Quarter Life Crisis. Retrospectively, we could have spent it better, but it's like
everything in retrospect.
Exactly. But it was a really, 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 really cool experience. It was a ton of fun.
So, okay, so you make this album. How do you release it? Like, did part of that money go to, like, releasing it? Like, or did part of the contest help release it or anything? Or were you just, did you have to kind of release it independently?
I think, so contractually, like, all the money had to be made on the creative process of the album, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, what it took to do those things.
Yeah.
None of it was really spent on, like, the promotion, really. Like, at least no, like, sizable amounts. It was mostly just, like, production, going to like different studios and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a cool context.
It was cool. It was really, really cool. Features. Like, you know, I got to like, I could afford features, you know.
That's really cool.
Who did you get to feature?
Trinidad James, BJ the Chicago Kid as well. So that was cool. It was like those things that like, it helped in the ways that when people kind of like see you be able to like get featured with artists they respect it, like, you know. So I think that those kind of intangible things like set me up to have like a certain amount of like cachet, or you know what I'm saying, like in the industry, like when I first started out. So it was a really cool experience. Like I think in a lot of ways, it's still continuing to like pay off now. So it's cool.
Yeah, it also just must have made so many things real, right? It just maybe felt more real to like be able to have a feature and like collaborate with someone or something. Or like, I mean, going to South by Southwest is a big deal. Like, what was that like?
It was really cool. It was, we ended up, so we went and we did a showcase with Mountain Dew. And then, when we were there, we ended up doing another show with, we were friends with Chance the Rapper, his manager at the time. We were friends with him. We just like met up while we were down there. We'd been like internet friends. We had, like, hung out there. And he was like, oh, you want to come like do Chance the Showcase? And it was like, yes. You know, so like,
oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was cool. And it was like all kinds of like, I ended up having, not having to quit my job, but I kind of like quit my job after that because like we had to extend our trip. I had already like not been to work for music stuff before. So I was like, I'm just not. I was like, here, I'm going to be over here. They were like, you're not going to have a job when you get back. I was like, I get it. So it was like, that was like the final, like, you know, cut tie from having like a regular job. Kind of like you said, it all kind of like things will like develop from each other. And you just end up, you know, going in a direction.
Now,
it's cool.
Did any of this mean anything to your parents? Or were they still like... You got to go back to school or something.
Yeah, the contest was like a little bit, but like it probably wasn't stable until maybe like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because both you and your brother are in on this. So they must have just been like, our kids, they're just too far
outta
gone.
Here. They're out of here. Yeah. But oddly enough, my brother and I being in on it helps my mom. She's like, at least they're together.
You know, that's nice.
At least they're together. Working together.
That's a good
they're
point.
You know, it's like, and she understands that like we both take it very seriously because we're both in on it. And my family's really close. So, you know, she's glad there's like a family business. So she loves it now.
So wait, is your brother older or younger than you?
Older. And he's my manager.
Okay, cool. That's cool.
I love that relationship. That's cute to me.
It's super cute, man. It's real cute.
I think I really understand that your mom like supports it more because of that, because like my parents growing up were always like, your sisters are gonna like your bond with them is so important, like they're gonna be here after we are, kind of thing. Like all you have is your sisters, and that was like drilled into us, kind of thing. And I'm sure if there was something like that happened with my sisters and I, my parents would be like, oh my God, we did it.
she loves it. My younger sister's an artist too, so like
amazing.
Yeah, exactly. She's making her first album now. So it's, you know, it's fun, man. It's a family thing.
That is cool. And your mom knows. She's like, this is the type of music you should be making.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. She's
if I can dance to it, I support it.
Boom. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's awesome. Okay. So where do you go from there? You do Chance's Showcase. What are your next steps? Do you start working on a new album or...
Yeah, what happened? We did, I guess, before The Quarter came out after that. Because, yeah, before The Quarter comes out, like, a little bit after that, that album does, you know, it, like, starts me having a fan base, I guess. Then I start working on my next project, which was Quarter Life Crisis, which that album did better, you know? And it, I think that was, like, the thing that, like, kept being able to lean on the fact that it's like, oh, wow, more people like this one than the last one. And more people like this one than the last one. So it was like, that was like the driver of I should keep doing this.
It's good to always just also grow and be able to be like, at least there's an uptick, you know, like with everything. Was making that second album, did it happen like organically? Or was it just more like, I should do this? And then you put, like, there was any pressure or anything? Or was it just like you like being motivated to write and stuff?
I think retrospectively, I didn't realize this because it's always retrospective. I think the thing about that second album was I was kind of spoiled because like the first time I got to make an album, I had like $50,000, you know? And then it's like...
That changes things.
And it changes things, but then it also shows what finishing Quarter Life Crisis kind of showed me was there's also certain just like invaluable things, you know, that you have that so many things that came together. Like it's like I got to have like... Not bigger, but like I had different features on it that I wouldn't have had, that I couldn't have paid for. You know, like it was like free stuff that was like, yo, I'm just, you know, this is a relationship that just developed. There was that pressure because I didn't have that same like financial backing, but like we still like got it done. And I like feel like I made like a genuinely better album, you know? So it was like, it was cool to know that like investment came back in that sense. It was like, okay, cool. We've well oiled the machine to be able to know how to do this, you know, in the long term. So, yeah.
Yeah. I actually have some technical questions. So, like, did you teach yourself to engineer and mix your music?
Yeah. So back when, like, I first started, like, making music, we just needed an engineer. And I just ended up being the person who I was just the geekiest of my friends. So that was pretty much it. I ended up just being kind of the de facto mix guy.
How did you learn?
YouTube, trial and error.
Yeah. Self-taught kind of.
Yeah. And then like being, totally self-taught. And then like being around other engineers. I interned at Patchwork Studios, like my freshman year of college, where I was like pretending to go to school, but not. All really self-taught. And then as I would be like around engineers or go to different studios, like I would play my stuff and they would be, oh, who mixed this? It sounds good. And I'm like, it's all totally subjective. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like taste is, you know, taste is subjective, but it's also like it refines over time. So
Is that a side of the process that you enjoy, or is it just more doing it out of necessity?
A little of both. It's a little of both. I honestly enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. My brother will catch, I don't want to enjoy it, but my brother will catch me enjoying it sometimes. He'll be like, you like this shit. Stop acting like you don't. I'm like,
you complain about it, and then you're like, he sees you smiling when you're doing it. And you're like,
yeah, in moments. It's very meticulous, like at the very, very end. The closer you get to the end, the less changes you're making, but like, it's the tiny, tiny refinements at the end that make it what it is. So,
I mean, I will say, like, I hate editing a podcast, but then there's a part of me that's like, ooh, that's a clean cut.
You know? Yeah. You hate it. Yeah. When you do it right, it's so satisfying.
You're like, that sounds, ooh, that's a tight edit. They don't even know all the uhs and ums this person just said. Ooh, it's clean.
I feel like it's not appreciated when it comes to podcast, or maybe when it comes to anything, which is like there's so much time put in to like maybe a couple minutes worth of something, and you're like,
but that's what you want though, because you don't want it to sound edited. So it's like, you want it to be clean. So someone's like, I didn't hear any edits. And you're like, exactly. Don't appreciate how much work I've done, because I don't want you to know. Because if you do know there's edits, that means I did a bad job. So it's like a weird like give and take. It's like, what are you gonna do?
The amount of time put into making a thing is always exponentially longer than how long the thing is enjoyed. You know, like, and it's like, think of how long does it take to eat a piece of cake? Oh, it takes hours to make a cake. You make it for hours, and then
or
you
like
just
a movie.
Like, you know,
it takes like months to make a movie.
You shoot it for months, sometimes years, and then they, you know,
it's like an hour and a half.
It's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Or we shoot a music video. 3 locations, 2 days, 14 hours in all, 2.5 minutes on the internet.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I understand that life. Trust me. That's, no one has any idea of, well, I guess if the people that are in the know or the industry or whatever know, but like so much time goes into genuinely a few minutes money too.
Yeah. I think that it's the difference between producing and consuming. It's like, it takes so much longer to produce and so much shorter to just munch.
I know people don't know. We actually record our interviews 5 hours long, and then we cut them down to like an hour. And y'all don't even know
we're
at
hour three. So,
all right, well, let's take another quick break, and we'll be right back with Kalechi.
This Mother's Day, join CARE in honoring the resilience of mothers around the world. In Sierra Leone, facing one of the world's highest maternal mortality rates, one nurse named Zainab has not lost a single mother. Supported by CARE's work, Zainab's clinic has become a beacon of hope in her community. Zainab's spirit extends to CARE's work worldwide, aiming to ensure every mother's safety during childbirth. Learn more at care.org/Mother's Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
She's breathing right now? Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. So you met Faye in high school?
Yes. Well, we met in middle school. We went to the same middle school. And then he moved. That's when he moved to Decatur in maybe sophomore year.
Okay.
Or his junior year. But like we went to the same middle school, went to different high schools, went to the same high school, and then went to different high schools. So mm-hmm.
When did you guys start collaborating?
Probably like towards the very end of high school. Because in high school we were like making diss songs to each other.
Oh. Yeah.
Hilariously.
He had it coming.
Oh wait, I think I remember him saying that.
Yeah,
show,
he mentioned that. I mean, like a friendship that grows out of that is like that's built to last.
It's really funny. It's a really great origin story. It's very funny.
It is very good.
It is great. Who did you listen to growing up? What kind of music were you into?
Man, I went through like different phases. I went through a big Jay-Z phase, of course, a big Kanye phase. Went through a big Wayne phase, but then I went through a weird Big Game. I really liked The Game for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked who else? I was super into Lupe Fiasco, Nelly. I went through a Common. Oh, I love B by Common.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a bunch of like really deep phases. Big Lupe phase, Kanye, big Wale phase, big J. Cole. Not even Wale phase. I still love Wale. Cole.
Like, these are the artists that you really looked up to. And, like,
yeah.
Or, like, was it, do you look up to them? Or were there, like, things in their style that you were, like, really trying to, like, I don't know, do it on your own kind of thing?
I, like, really looked up to them in, like, a total, like, kind of, like, teenage way. Like, oh. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw myself being, like, a rapper's rapper. You kind of have an idea of what you want to, the artist you want to be. And then, like, you become the artist you are. And, like, those aren't the same thing.
Never.
But, like, yeah, I think that was, like, who I would, like, look up to.
No, I love that. I'm sure if you told your younger self where you are now and, like, what you've done. And, like, I try to remember that whenever I'm down, being like, if I was telling my little self that XYZ has happened, they'd be thrilled.
Yeah. Totally proud. Myself would be totally proud. My young self. Everyone's story is different, you know? So I think that I had, like, an ideal. Rather than an idea.
That's deep.
Well,
ideal versus an idea. I'm going to think of that for a while. I guess that makes me think of something like an interesting little thing about your music. Like how much of it is derived from like the personal? Because you said you like poetry and for me, poetry is really personal, but does your music come from like a really personal place or is it has it evolved over time?
It's like all real shit that has happened to me or that like, and if it's not literally, then it is like in its, the sentiment is real. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if it's not like literally what's happening, it's like, it's coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
I believe that about most people's art. Like it's coming from somewhere. Stories are a big element of my music. So like, I find myself having to live life to be able to come back and make music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what else is there?
What else is there?
What else is there?
I don't even know. Some rappers, I feel like they've put out albums recently, and we'll talk off air. And I'm like, have you? I don't feel like you have much left. Like, you've actually gotten too famous, and there's a lack of relatability in your music. And like, they're like low key, like rapping about Taco Bell. You're like, I don't even know where, what do you have? You have nothing left because one, you've either like overdone it in the media, like where it's like there's no transparency left in your behavior or what you're saying or doing. I am talking about a specific rapper. I'm sure you guys probably have figured out by now.
I think
but
everyone
like,
knows. We don't have to be hush-hush about it.
It's like after a while, you're like, okay, how do you still have like more shit to put out? It's like you're not really doing anything where I'm like, wow. Like there's no introspection. I'm just like, okay. It's just fun. I don't know.
I think in that situation, and I think a lot of situations, I think at some point art becomes really just for the artist versus for a lot of people versus for the world or like an audience. I feel like, when I don't think everything has to be relatable per se, but I do think you can tell when the artist just needs to make something for themselves versus needs to connect. You could also tell on the other side, there's maybe a lack of purpose behind it and more just a need for something. But then that's different from artist to artist. And I don't know what's going on in their head or their intentions, but I do think there's an interesting split that might happen, or maybe it always has started as being art for the self versus art for connection or understanding or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah. There's expression, you know, I don't know. I feel like as if an artist makes something, they made it for a reason. What's the reason? I don't know. I have some songs of mine that I'm like, that's a stupid song, you know?
I mean,
like,
not everything has a deep meaning. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Not everything is deep. It's usually like, if it's fun, that's the whole purpose kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's what I mean. Yeah. But like, I feel like there's the expression of something for for whatever reason that is. And then there's like, how is it received?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but like it's all so subjective. Like people would take songs that like, a song of mine that I thought was stupid. I'd be like, oh, it ended up being X, Y, and Z to me. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And it's like, there'll be the songs, like, and like, almost like what we were talking about earlier with like you editing these minute details that people do not notice or appreciate. It's like, sometimes there can be the song that you just knew was the one, and that's not the one. And then there's the one that you made on a whim, on accident, not even, and it ends up, you know, you know, it's also, I don't know.
It's like very subjective. I know
it's
what you're
so
saying.
Subjective.
I forgot who said this. But they were saying, I think it was maybe in regards to film or books or music. I don't remember what it was. Mm-hmm. But they were saying, as soon as you put something out, it's no longer yours.
It's like, not yours anymore.
It's up to the audience to decide what it is.
100%.
And I agree with that. Because there are some things that I've done that I never thought of the way that someone received it. But I'm so glad it exists for them in that way. You know what I mean? And so it's like, once you've released something, it has a life of its own after that.
100%. Yeah, sometimes you get the feedback on something like years and years later. You literally don't understand even what it is until it comes back to you, like until it's reflected back. You're like, oh, I didn't even know anyone cared about that. Oh, I didn't know people took it that way. Oh, what a misunderstanding. And it's just like, you know.
I want to posit something. Now, shouldn't all art in a way be made for yourself, because it shouldn't really matter what people think? Like, that should be an extension of it. Like, we shouldn't be making it for the people, we should be making it for ourselves, like what we enjoy and what we like. I think the reception is what comes with it later, but it shouldn't be about the reception to begin with. Does that make sense?
Yeah
You make the stuff you like. I assume that the effort you guys put into the content you create, at the end of the day, it's something you would watch, you know? But then it's like, all you really have control over is like you liking it, you know, and you being happy with it when you release it. And then from there, like you said, the reception, the reaction, all of that, it just kind of, it comes later, and you can't control that. Everyone's going to approach it from their perspective.
Yeah. I do think everything is, not everything. Again, not everything is deep, but a lot of the times things can be a catharsis for the self. But on a lot of levels, I still think that like once it's out, it's everyone else's. It maybe started for the self and it became something else. Everyone's different. It's all subjective. Every artist makes different things, whatever. There's no umbrella thing.
There it is.
Everything is just philosophy and it's whatever bullshit I'm trying to psychoanalyze.
I feel you.
Yes. What I'm trying to say is I hate art. Let's get rid of it.
Let's get rid of art.
No, I love it. That's all I care about. I only think of everything as artistic expression, so...
That's the best way to think yourself into a hole.
Yeah.
I'm doing that right now. I'm blanking. But fast forward to like present day or even like COVID times, like how did that influence your output or like your idea of like who you are as an artist or anything like that?
So let's say end of 2019, I was on my first tour. We went on the 85 to Africa tour with Jadena. I was like gaining like a momentum, probably like that I hadn't had before. I was like, oh shit, we on tour. Mm-hmm. We out here. You know what I'm saying? And then right at the beginning of 2020, I was like, hey, there's this thing called COVID. And I was like, dang, it's crazy. It makes plane tickets really cheap. And then like the world shut down and I couldn't keep doing shows. Then right. I thought, you know, we're going to continue coming in at that same rate because it's like, I mean, of course, everyone's future calendar, you know, totally just like fell off in March of 2020. So like we had so many future plans that I was like dead set on. And then I realized, oh, pivot. So
yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But like emotionally and mentally, how did the last year and a half affect you then as an artist? Because I think musicians got hit maybe the hardest, in my opinion. I don't know. They're just their livelihood's gone.
And it's because two things. So shows were like the main ways that like artists could make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially like independent artists. Like streaming is okay if you're like, you know, not huge. But, you know, like what streaming well can do is get people to hear your stuff enough to where you can get opportunities. A lot of my opportunities be like, oh, I heard so-and-so song from so-and-so and they're booking the spring show at this college, you know? And it mm-hmm. would be like stuff like that. And then it's like that was now off the table. Mm-hmm. So I think that the good thing is, and everyone says it's a good thing, but you figure out how to pivot. You find other ways to like make money creatively and all that good stuff. Yeah, it was super hard. You know, it was really, really hard. But you figure it out. I didn't do any shows. I think the first show I did post everything shutting down was like in December of 2020. And it was like a car show.
Like so almost a full year.
Yeah, it was over more than a year. Like of being on a stage performing because it was like the end of 19 was when the tour was and then I didn't really perform again until the end of 2020, which was wild.
What did it feel like to be on stage again?
It was great, man. It was cool. It was for the Warnock Ossoff campaign thing. So I was like,
yeah,
look at me doing some like political stuff for the people.
I love that.
You feel me? Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. It was cool.
God, what a time, Warnock and Ossoff. Ugh.
Man, so much paper, just paper in the mail. Just it wouldn't stop. It was like my mailbox would just be spitting paper. I've never known. I can only imagine how many trees had to die for this man to get into it.
That's a way to look at it. Like that, they made their sacrifice. Well,
you have one like rich, scary crypt keeper lady being like, I made so much money off you sick, dead people. And you're like, oh my God. So she's got money to destroy your mailbox. And then you have like people who are like, oh God, guys, we got to get this place blue. Yeah. This is not worth it. Look who's in charge.
Super duper hard. But you know, I guess it was worth it.
Yeah, it is worth it.
It's worth it in the end. I do wish it was more like spam my emails because then I don't have to like, you know, watch trees be cut down.
But I think there's a divide. I think there's a good amount of people that don't give a shit about email and those people can influence a lot of demographics. And then the other side, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to send it to like the old people who are like, I have to check my mail.
Exactly.
And they still get physical newspapers, like those folks.
I'm actually one of those folk.
I think it just comes down to like, oh, if that side is spending $1 million on paper, we'll spend $2 million on paper. And they're like, if they're going to spend $2 million on paper, we'll spend three. It just, that's why. And then
it goes on and on.
And it just goes on. It's just, it's just a money contest. And they just, really, that's one of the ways that the money gets spent. It's so funny seeing like towards the end of the election, the way that you can just see it's like, yeah, they're just spending the money on whatever. Because you just gotta
they have it
and you gotta go hard and get a skywriter and a man with a sign and a parachuter and Someone shooting t-shirt cannons out, whatever, just whatever you
so can extra, do. It's so extra, so over the top. Like, why not? Like, if you have more money to spend, you can do better things with it. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I truly just do not know. I really don't know. I know that it's not like this in other countries, apparently. Apparently, their politics are not like sports, but.
Oh, I mean, America is one of the worst.
You know.
I don't understand when you it's say fun. That their politics are not like sports. That doesn't make sense to me.
There's not a good team and a bad team?
Does not. Exactly. It is not a them and an us.
Unfortunately, yeah. I cannot contribute to this conversation because I don't understand.
Yeah. Stop talking bad about my favorite sports team. Ugh.
That's hilarious.
Let's take our last break before we get too excited. We'll be right back.
This Mother's Day, join CARE in honoring the resilience of mothers around the world. In Sierra Leone, facing one of the world's highest maternal mortality rates, one nurse named Zainab has not lost a single mother. Supported by CARE's work, Zainab's clinic has become a beacon of hope in her community. Zainab's spirit extends to CARE's work worldwide, aiming to ensure every mother's safety during childbirth. Learn more at care.org/Mother's Day.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation,
I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating.
And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Okay, so since the end of 2020, what has your life looked like these past like 9.5 months?
So 2020 happens. I put out the album that I had like started making about.
Right. Yeah,
so I put
Let's just talk really quickly about that then. Like, what was that like releasing something during COVID?
It was weird. It was cool, but it was weird not being able to like see people. But I did like a virtual tour thing. I don't know. Everybody was doing weird shit back then. Like, I did like a series of like these online performances. As things have opened up, like I've gotten like some more tour dates, and we're actually getting to like tour this album and perform some of these songs on the road again. So like it's all kind of come back full circle, you know?
I'm really glad that you're going to be able to perform more regularly, because independent artists, like, you really rely on that exposure and that like that audience to like bring in more money, as far as I'm aware, with like the bands I know here.
Yeah, and you also can't duplicate a live show. Like, being in the room with someone and turning someone who did not leave their house to see you into like, you know, something like, oh, I kind of like this guy. You know, it's a unique experience, and it's like once you've done it, you're like, that's really fun. I want to keep doing that. And then also it's like the economic aspect as well, because capitalism.
because capitalism. That's just the end point to so many things.
To literally. Because
everything, probably. Mm-hmm. So when you're touring or like really focused on performing mostly one album, mm-hmm. are you not even thinking about the next thing, or are there still ideas brewing in your mind?
Because of the nature of being an artist, I'm usually thinking of the next thing while performing the current thing.
Mm.
So like right now, it's like the album that I have out is Going Home. We dropped that. The last of it came out in February 21. Yeah. So like right now I'm prepping my next album, and it's called At Lagos, which is like a combination of Atlanta and Lagos put together.
I love
Lagos
that.
Lagos being Nigeria, Atlanta being Atlanta, smashing it together. But yeah, so that's the album I'm finishing now. And Going Home is available on all streaming platforms.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I'm really excited to keep seeing this like incline in everything. That's all we can hope for as any people that make things.
You know, exactly. Just keep having fun with it. I think that's the main thing. As long as I've kept it fun, it's been fun for people to watch. I think that you just kind of got to, make a show out of it. People appreciate it.
Yeah.
You guys understand. It's probably very similar to what you do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
You guys are rap stars. You guys are total rap stars. You don't know it. You're both.
Look, I did teach myself to freestyle in the pandemic. Was it good? No, but it was fun for like a tight, 20 minutes when you have nothing else to do. And that's I created fire. A mixtape for myself, and I listen to it every once in a while. I rap along with myself, and I think, wow.
Oh,
she's so
crazy.
Good. She's so good.
Is it on Spotify?
No. Yeah, I'm going to put my terrible mixtape on Spotify.
It's really, they're really funny. She sent me a couple. I was just having all fun. Of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll share my Dropbox folder, but you can't make fun of me. It's so bad. It's like, I literally was like, I start out really bad and then I get better by the end. It's like it was just all night because my boyfriend, he freestyles and he makes beats, and he was like, yeah, just try it. Just sit here and like do like mm-hmm. beat roulette where it was like a Spotify like instrumentals. And he was just like, just jump through and listen and like, have fun. And so this I did it. I did it. It was like all night. I got a little high, and then it was like 3 to 4 hours of me doing it. Cause after a while I wouldn't give him the mic back, and he just like left because he was like, okay.
Hilarious.
Yeah. He's like, we get it. You're now a rapper. And I was like, get out of here. I'm in the studio.
Yeah. But it's also fun to like do something with no intention of monetizing it, like purely for fun.
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
And it was straight nonsense, but it was fun by the end to be like, oh, okay, I like get it. I get how it works now.
And it's a bug that bites you. I think that everyone likes to hear their voice. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a natural inclination.
You're telling me.
No, I think that people want, let me rephrase that. I think that people want to like to hear their voice.
That's
and I
true.
Think that
That's
the
true.
More you do it, the more you record and the more you understand like the nuances of your voice and what to do with it and blah, 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 when it's like recording back. I think that there's a weird, addictive, maybe meditative thing about that, hearing it. I've heard a lot of artists like, it's like a bug that bites you when you first hear like, ooh, I like to do this. It's mm-hmm. like when you hand someone a mic and they're like, and like they just do that. Like people just like speak into a mic because you like how it sounds. I think that naturally people want
That's
to
a good
like
point.
It.
I agree with that. I actually do agree with that. Especially if you like performing or like being an extrovert in that way, mm-hmm. I do think that's very applicable because I do like that. I like being on a stage. I like hearing my voice echo, even though I mean, having a podcast, honestly, has made me like my voice a lot more than I did,
mm-hmm.
which is not saying much because I really hated my voice and I still kind of do when I hear it back. But it's made me a lot more patient with mm-hmm. my voice, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. Totally makes sense.
Okay, so Going Home is available on all streaming platforms before the Quarter and Quarter Life Crisis. Those are...
Yes. Yeah. Those are the albums before Going Home. Going Home, I guess before The Quarter was kind of like a mixtape, and then Quarter Life Crisis.
Quarter Life Crisis was the one, the contest.
No, that was before The Quarter.
Oh, okay. Your first album, available mm-hmm. everywhere. Everything's available everywhere.
Yes.
You have, I'm just looking at Spotify right now, you have a lot of albums you didn't even mention. Woke Up to Winter, Spring Breakup, yeah, this is, I'm going to have to do like just a Kelechi playlist after this.
Oh, do that. We'll make some essentials.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you were able to come on. We're really grateful that Faye introduced you to us. And you're going to have to come back. Tell us about tour and your third album and stuff.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. We're doing some dates on the Empress Tour with Yemi Alade. And then I'm doing some dates with this other Nigerian artist whose name is Omale. At the end of October. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That sounds familiar. So, yeah. I wonder. I got to go check everyone out.
I know.
They're very great artists. I'm really, really lucky to be on tour with them. So I'm excited.
Yay. We're excited too. I'm excited. You're amazing. Excited. Everyone's excited.
I am not excited, actually.
Actually, just like a little chime in.
I am actually going to go to my first live show this week, which I haven't been. I'm going to go see James Blake. I'm very excited. Okay. I haven't been to a show in so long. I'm one, terrified. I guess he's going to wear 6 masks. And not take a sip of anything. That mask ain't coming off, baby. Not today, Corona. Yeah. You're not going to get me.
It's so funny. It's interesting to know what artists people are seeing first as like their first concert. It's like, who are you willing to risk it all for? Yeah. And it's James Blake is your answer.
Well, yeah. I mean, I almost went to a show a few weeks ago for the Grouch and Eli because my boyfriend was going and I chose not to go last minute. But I was just being lazy, but James Blake is just the one. Like, I don't know. He's
That's a good hill to die on.
His music always transcends me. And in the past, I would do a lot of drugs and go to his shows. Now that I'm old and tired, I just am like showing up with my weed pen, like, woo,
it's crazy. Here. drugs aren't as fun as they used to be.
Yeah.
Alcohol particularly is not as fun as it used to be. No. I used to like alcohol.
But his music, I just like to see him. I'm actually going to see him twice this week. It's a weird thing. I'll tell you guys about it.
I didn't know you were that big of a fan.
I mean, it's a long story, but I'll tell you guys. I had to use a bunch of StubHub credits because of this goddamn pandemic that are about to expire. So last minute, I was like, God damn it, I have to go to all these shows before the end of the year. I got to risk coronas because of this goddamn StubHub. So, I'll tell you guys off air because, I need my privacy because I know everyone's dying to know where I am at all times.
Yeah. Yeah, my first show was my friend's band, and it was like an outdoor thing, and it was just really fun to just like, obviously everyone had masks on and stuff, but it was just fun to like dance around with your friends
and
again,
listen to music,
watching your friends like be really sick on stage. The first concert that I've bought tickets for isn't until next year though. It's the Call Me If You Get Lost tour, which I'm really excited about, but I'm hoping to see. Tyler Creator. Yeah, this is like Call Me If You Get Lost.
I'm really interested to see what he would do on stage.
Me too.
His stage shows have been so like his award show.
Did you
show
see the Lollapalooza
really
one?
And the Lollapalooza
it
one was
blew
crazy.
Me away.
And
oh
it's
my
like
God.
That was and that was a like of course festivals are like huge and everything, but like when he gets to like
because
a tour you get to do it over and over and like get it right, you know. So like I would love to see what he would do with the opportunity to like.
He always just really just, I don't know, blows my mind with what he's able to come up with for stage performances. I mean, everything really, but like, I'm really excited for that. But hopefully I can squeeze something in before 2021 or 2022. Oh my God.
Yeah. I know. Almost done with the time is whatever, clearly we.
Nothing matters. Okay. Yeah. Well,
I will say my favorite part about James Blake, he just sits at like a drum set and is like, every sound you're about to hear will be played live. And you're like, and that's it. And that's all he does. He doesn't even like talk to you.
I didn't know
he
did that.
Well, he'll have like 3 guys on a drum set with him and then they'll be playing. And then, they have their like whatever MIDI boards or whatever the fuck. I don't know whatever's going on. Mm-hmm. But like I saw him at Radio City Music Hall. Actually, it's really funny because he had Vince Staples open for him, who is like a next level of energy compared to him. And it was so funny to me because it was like Vince Staples is just like jumping around the fucking stage. And everyone was just at the Radio City Music Hall like, like it was such, it was just like not a Vince Staples crowd. I was like, this is absurd.
Vince Staples is opening for Tyler too.
He's a great performer. I really recommend it. Like, I feel like I was the only one like, and everyone else was just like, oh, interesting. And I was like, this is great. I actually love
I'm excited to see Vince now.
You should. He's great. Apparently him and James Blake were roommates. That's how they know each other, but I don't
did
know.
Did not know that either. No, interesting. Gonna do some digging. Before we go, Kelechi, please tell the audience where they can find you on the internet if you want to be followed.
Yeah.
On the street.
Yeah, in the street. Just follow me down the sidewalk and at Kelechi, K-E-L-E-C-H-I-E-F. You can follow me there on all the things. If you type that in on the thing, I'll probably pop up.
Yay! Cool. Yes. Thank you again so much for being on the show. And until next time, listen to all of Kelechi's discography, please.
All of it. Just stream it on a low volume. Not on mute, but on a low volume while you sleep.
Okay.
Okay.
Do that.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast. Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast. Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I had talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.